we surgeons get a bad rap that we only want to do surgery, but there's so much more to it. And I think the best surgeons are the ones who keep their patients out of the operating room.
Exactly. And one of the things I've always thought is, you know, when we go through our training, we look at, okay, what is the cream of the crop? Like, what do you want to do? You want to do like the biggest operation. So in general surgery, it was the Whipple. You want to do a Whipple. It's a 10-hour cancer operation. If you are so lucky that you can do a Whipple, then you have reached the pinnacle. In plastic surgery, it's the facelift. Yeah. And so for years, I actually gauged my success on how many facelifts I had. And I got to a point where I was doing so many of them. I had people flying in across the country. And then I had a patient with a horrible complication from one, and it set me in a complete tailspin and made me really relook at why I'm doing what I'm doing and should I even be a plastic surgeon. And in the end, I realized just what you said is the goal that I was always thought was what we're supposed to do is the goal is to bring people to the operating room should be the opposite. It should be how do we keep people out of the operating room but keep them healthy and happy, and in my situation, feeling great about themselves.
Yeah, for sure. And you bring up facelifts. I think I did get a question on social media, like, what's better, Botox or facelift? Like, when do you decide that someone should go forward with a facelift? And nowadays, you're hearing about all these liquid facelifts or non-surgical facelifts. So maybe you can shed some light on that.
So yeah, there are two very different things. So Botox is a neurotoxin. It's actually one of the most dangerous toxins in the world. And if you get just a tiny amount put into your body, you can die from it. But if you take the most minuscule, tiniest amount and you put it in a very controlled fashion into a muscle, let's say a muscle that creates your crow's feet wrinkles, then you can weaken that muscle for a good 3 to 4 months and cause those wrinkles to smooth out. That's different than a facelift where we're actually cutting out excess skin and we're removing hanging skin like jowls and excess skin from under the neck as a way to tighten the lower face. And so it is a big difference. You know, there's a lot, though, that we can do now with technology has been so kind to us with giving us all these avenues to tighten skin, to even remove fat, to enhance the complexion. Surgery really is something that we can save just for those specific situations that require it.
So there's so much technology. I mean, I can't keep up, right? I'm like a plastic surgery noob, but there's like lasers and radio frequency and red light masks and all this stuff. Like, what works out of those things? Like, what should we be looking for as consumers if we're looking to tighten up our skin or try to avoid maybe injecting Botox or doing other things?
So really, there's so many things that work. I think the question is going to be really for your audience is, what do you start with? Okay. And where's a good bang for your buck? Because yes, there are laser treatments that you can have like a 2-week downtime that can do wonders on your skin, but most people don't want to have a 2-week downtime. So the first thing that I recommend people start, you say, hey, I'd like just to get my skin better. I'm on a budget. I don't want to spend a ton of money. You mentioned earlier there are red light masks. That's a good place to start. So red light therapy is something that is very popular in more of the holistic alternative medicine realm. Yet you talk to dermatologists and plastic surgeons, and they don't really have much of an opinion on it. The idea behind red light therapy is that the red light, if you put it onto your skin, it's not proven. We don't know exactly why it works, but the belief is that it can help power your mitochondria. Mitochondria are the powerhouses of our cells, and they create ATP. And the idea is that the energy from that light, from that red light, it gets absorbed by your cells, and it helps to essentially energize them. Now, it's kind of this theoretical, you know, thing that we think this is how it works. But what we do know is that studies have been done on red light therapy and shown that, for example, there was one study that looked at, it was something like 1,200 patients, and they treated them for 90 days with red light therapy and found a statistically significant improvement in wrinkles and skin hydration with it. They even did split face studies where you'd have literally only half of the face treated with red light therapy and found significant improvement in the skin tightness and the firmness of the skin afterwards. And that was, I think, after like 2 months of therapy. The good thing with red light therapy is it's completely safe. There are a lot of ways to do it. There are handheld devices that you can do like a quarter of your face at a time, which I find to be kind of annoying because I'd rather just get it all done. Yeah. There are tabletop devices that are usually pretty affordable. You can get them usually for a few $100s. There are these creepy looking masks that light up that you may see people on like social media wear. Those are great too. You can usually get that for a couple $100s, or there's even actually full body beds that some people do for red light.
Some of the best moments in life are spontaneous, unplanned. But for men dealing with moderate to severe erectile dysfunction, or ED, preparing for intimacy can rob you and your partner of spontaneity. The joy of living in the moment. Now you can restore that spark in your relationship with the AMS 700 implant, a clinically proven permanent solution designed for your satisfaction and your partner's. It's the number one physician-preferred implant. It's built to look and feel natural. Happy partners agree. 92% of patients and 96% of their partners report sexual activity with the implant excellent or satisfactory. It gives you the ability to respond to your partner's wishes in the moment, not minutes or hours later. The AMS 700. No pills, no injections, no waiting. For more information, visit edcure.org/podcast. That's edcure.org/podcast. Sponsored by Boston Scientific.
I think red light therapy is a great entrance point for people who are looking to use technology to look younger because it's so safe. It definitely helps, and you can do it in the comfort of your own home. When you're looking at going outside of the home, and if you're looking for a good bang for your buck, let's say at a med spa, then the first thing I would start with is IPL, intense pulse light. And essentially what this is using light to target dark spots. It actually will heat up those dark spots on your skin, cause those dark spots to slough off after about 7 to 12 days. And the good thing about IPL is that it's relatively inexpensive compared to more expensive laser treatments. There's no downtime to it, and it definitely works.
Can you use IPL for like under eye dark circles?
Not quite the same. For under eye dark circles, you have to look at the cause, and the treatment should be targeted to the cause. So some people get under eye circles because they have puffiness under their eyes. That's what I've got. You know, I've inherited puffiness under my eyes from my mom. And unfortunately, that puffiness creates shadowing that can look like a dark circle. So that's usually treated, unfortunately, surgically to remove that fat. But you can also get dark circles from pigmentation. So a lot of people who are like Indian, they can get some of that where it's pigmentation. That's treated with more brightening creams. And you can also get dark circles from thinning of the skin. So people who have lighter skin, that skin is super thin and it can even become almost transparent. So you can see the dark blood vessels underneath. That treatment is going to be using, let's say, a retinol eye cream where you can create some thickening of that skin gradually to make it essentially less transparent.
I've seen also people doing like caffeine for like temporary, right?
Yep.
Temporary like brightening.
Yeah. So you can get tightness with the caffeine. It's kind of dehydrating. And so somebody like myself where it's due to puffiness, then caffeine can definitely help.
I know we talked a little bit about red light. The interesting thing about red light is there was this craze a little while back about putting red light on your scrotum.
Yeah.
Help with testosterone. Now, yes. Unfortunately, it doesn't work because it doesn't penetrate deep enough to get to the testicles. And so people were studying their perineum,
yeah,
and putting red light on their scrotum, which doesn't really help.
So, you know, the interesting thing, because I know the guy that they say, you know, there's these big muscle guys who go on social media. They go, a study done by Ben Greenfield back in like 2007 or something showed that your testosterone increased when you know what he did? This was an article that was written in, I think it was an online magazine, or maybe it was even Rolling Stone, where he tried it on himself, and he saw an increase in testosterone levels. That's it. This is not a study. This
and
is
he does a
one
lot of
guy
that can improve his testosterone.
He's like a biohacker guy, yeah. So he's trying all different things. But this is like one guy, so you can't say that a study was performed by him.
Right.
This guy tried on himself, and somehow his testosterone levels increased. But what caused it to increase?
Right. Right, you know. He could have been working out hard the day before or that morning or who knows.
And that's
right.
Not a reason to go burn your perineum. That's the thing. So
people do interesting things to their perineum. Speaking of, we talked about Botox. People do Scrotox, right? Do you see a lot of men coming to you for that?
I think it's a very niche thing. And one of the things as a plastic surgeon, and you'll probably be happy, I say I stay away from that area in general. So I don't do female genital surgery. There's genital cosmetic surgery, labiaplasty, that's real popular. It's not my thing. Male genital surgery, cosmetic surgery is not quite as popular, although Scrotox, honestly, I think it's made news because it's just kind of funny.
Yeah.
That people think, okay, you're getting Botox to smooth out your scrotum. And some people say because it smooths out, it hangs lower and it, I guess, is more attractive that way or something. But the big thing they say is you got to watch out for those toilets with really high water. Because you could get wet.
Yeah, I don't know that women think a lot about scrotums, I'll be honest with you, but I think if it makes you feel better, I mean, this is, I think, how plastic surgeons think, if it's going to make you feel better, it's relatively safe, like, there's no harm in it, certainly, but I think, again, you have to think about why you're doing it.
Well, it's like that study that was performed, it was in Asia, about how attractive men's scrotums are, yeah. And they had them list on a scale of 1 to, like, positive 2 to, like, -2, and +2 being attractive and -2 being unattractive, and every single scrotum was in the negative range. And so the idea is that there's no such thing as a beautiful scrotum. It's just levels of how ugly they are.
Yeah. I mean, I operate on scrotums for a living, right? And I can't say I've ever saw a scrotum and been like, wow. In terms of general plastic surgery, what do you see men coming in for?
So men come in for a lot of Botox. And the good thing about Botox is it's a way to reduce lines, to just look a few years younger, with that, if done really well, is hard to spot.
Yeah.
So number one thing is going to be Botox. The number two thing is going to be liposuction. And typically it's the love handle area and the abdomen that a lot of men come in for. Gynecomastia, also man boobs, essentially. That's also something that people come in for. Those are difficult operations. I recently stopped doing them. I didn't get a lot of patients doing it, but I feel I did a really good job. But it's hard because expectations in that part of the body, it's really difficult for men. And I had a lot of men where you take them and they'd had real gynecomastia, you know, real breast tissue, and you'd make them look quote unquote normal, but they were a lot of times dissatisfied.